Time for I've Been Thinking. Ellie Moore, take it away.
I have been very sad thinking about the number of women who have been killed in Australia since the beginning of this year. 25 already, that's one, according to my calculations, one every 4.5 days. And I mean, it really has developed into quite a crisis over there. We're not that much different here, but it's being reframed helpfully, I think, at the moment in Australia as a problem that men need to step up and solve. Just in the past day or so, the former Wallabies captain David Pocock, who's now a senator, released a statement, video statement, saying exactly that. And, you know, he got a bit of a roasting on X, like you do. But I think that when men start to own this problem of men's violence, then, well, obviously, the search for the solutions won't be left to women as it tends to be right now.
Shocking stat, isn't it? 25 women killed since January the 1st.
And, you know, these were not women in so-called, and I'm going to put this in heavy quote marks, unsafe spaces, you know, shopping centres, out for a run in the middle of the day, in their backyards, in their lounge rooms, in a hospital in one case. You know, these are places where people deserve to be safe.
Alison Moore, kia ora.
In fact, women deserve to be safe
yeah.
everywhere.
No, indeed.
And I'm, you know, as a woman and as an Australian, yeah. I just find this so distressing. But I am glad to see that it has, you know, the conversation is being taken into men's spaces as well.
Very good, very good. Thank you very much. I've been thinking there, Ellie Moore. All right, Ian Powell, I've been thinking.
Well, I've been thinking about an activity that I'm involved in on the Kapiti Coast. I sit on a health advisory committee to the local district council. When I was representing medical specialists, I was fascinated by the way we structure things. You have healthcare either provided in the main by general practices in the community or in hospitals. But in fact, things actually can get quite intertwined. What I'm involved in is leading an attempt to adapt a local Health New Zealand-owned facility, health centre, into a much bigger, what we're calling a polyclinic, that will actually include a mix of primary care and also non-acute hospital care. And that's really, part of it is driven by lack of health access for people who live on the Kapiti Coast. And also many of our GPs here have closed books. They can't take new enrolled patients. So I'm in the process of writing what we're calling a compelling case on why Te Whatu Ora should actually expand the services provided on the Kapiti Coast in this facility into something much more substantial and widened breadth. And our approach is to focus twofold. One is making sure we've got good empirical evidence to justify it, and I believe we do. And the other one is to be politically savvy in terms of how to deal with an organisation, Health New Zealand, which has been described to me as when you deal with it, it's like wading through thick treacle. So I've nicknamed our strategy to get a polyclinic on the Kapiti Coast a treacle avoidance strategy.
Ha, very good. Yeah. Ian Powell there. I've been thinking 18 to 7, the panel. And to this different topic now, climbing trees is a great part of many a childhood, but now a large macrocarpa trees that will be fenced off at the popular Tahuna Nui playground after a playground specialist found it breached safety standards. So this is in Nelson, by the way. I know this area well. It stands at 7 metres high, very high, and children risk falling on hard surfaces without adequate servicing. But are we teaching children to know their boundaries? Are we wrapping our kids in shag pile carpet or cotton wool? With us is PlaySafe director Adam Stride, who prepared the report. Kia ora, Adam.
Hi, Wallace. How are you going?
Great to have you here. Great topic, this one. How did you come to do an assessment of this tree?
Sure. Yeah. No. It's an interesting process, really. We're a playground and inspection and auditing service. So we assess play areas to compliance standards, to technical standards. In this occasion, not all trees. I'll just get this out of the way. So not all trees are considered or need to be assessed to playground standards. That's not what the playground standards are there to do. Obviously, trees in their natural state are a tree, and that's absolutely no problem in that respect. With this particular site, it's a little bit different because this Macrocarpa tree is a dead tree. It is in very close proximity of the play equipment. It's effectively a natural play element within the play area. And for decades, children have been playing on this piece of equipment.
Yeah.
So if you... And we, in a sense, we call it a piece of equipment because it's sort of a comes into the encouragement and provision of play. And so we've been seeing that for a long time. Council has been seeing that for a long time, and then obviously they wanted to get a bit of clarity around that, so they engaged us to do a report on this one tree.
And now it's fenced off, this popular tree. It's just deemed a bit dangerous. Our panel, keen to jump on this one. Ellie?
Why is it dangerous? Could you finish your corridor there?
Sure. So dangerous is a strong word. What we do when we assess risk in play areas, obviously it's like any industry, we assess probability and likelihood of injury versus severity of those injuries, and with this particular piece, the height of it is significant. It's around 7 meters high, and we're observing children climbing it on a daily basis. When we encourage children to climb and make challenges in play areas, we've got to provide some sort of fail-safe device as a surface, because kids make mistakes, and that's what playgrounds are there to do, is challenge and allow those mistakes to happen.
But well, here's one.
At both heights, it's a real issue.
Well, here's one for you. Adam speaks exactly to the point. My sister fell 10 metres out of a Macrocarpa tree, aged 8 or 9.
Oh, wow.
She's lucky to be alive. She was badly scratched and bruised, but we landed on pine needles, so no breaks. It got taken down, and we were glad. It was actually a real risk. So, yeah, it's that balance, isn't it, Ian Powell, between teaching kids to know boundaries and actually just being blooming safe, Ian?
Well, it is a balance between safety, children's safety, and adventure. And you don't want to compromise adventure, but at the end of the day, you have to err towards safety, not dogmatically so, but sensibly so. But my understanding is that this is a temporary measure, the fencing off, until some more permanent solution is found. And is it so expensive to actually put the material below that will make it safe if people fall off? I understand the tree stump that you can't grip it very well. It's very smooth.
Yeah, there's a couple of pieces to that. So the fencing, I'm not too sure. That's a relatively new decision that council have made, and I can't speak for that. So obviously they've understood the risks, and they've, without being able to probably go down the track of an improvement plan as yet, maybe budgeting decisions or something like that needs to happen. Of where they want to go with it. So fencing's probably a bit of a mitigation measure in the meantime before they go into the improvement strategy. But I think, with our report, we put together some recommendations and a way forward, a few options actually, to sort of really celebrate the actual play element itself, because it is a bit of a legacy structure. It's known for many, many decades.
Well, on that, can I just bring in Ellie to get a word in as well? Ellie, there's nothing like, and I can see it with my 6.5-year-old, you give that kid a tree and they've got a friend. They love trees more than anything. So
That is so true. And I guess not all trees are created equal, right? My kids, when they were little, had a tree in the backyard that they loved to climb. And every time one of them reached the top branches, my heart was in my mouth as I stood at the bottom of the tree kind of saying, okay, come down now. but at the same time, I loved the sense of freedom and wonder that it gave them. I grew up in the era of the incredibly dangerous playground equipment of the 1970s, where everything was made of steel and you know, on a 35 degree day in Melbourne, you were more likely to burn yourself than anything else. So yeah, I mean, as I say, there are trees and trees.
There are trees and trees. And can you recall the playground equipment of the 70s and 80s as Alison can, as I can, when you fell on hard concrete? Hey, let's always have time for Adam. Really appreciate your time and hope to have you back on again.
Good as gold. Thanks, Wallace.
That's PlaySafe director Adam Stride. There, someone says, why don't you just cut some steps around it with a chainsaw, fence the top, install a slide? Not a bad idea. Thanks for that. Now to this. We asked your favourite Shakespeare phrase and you delivered many responses. Dunedin councillor Steve Walker got in touch. Shall I compare these to a summer day? Thou art more lovely and more temperate. Well, today marks 460 years since the great bard was born, to celebrate Dr. Michael Kopp, senior lecturer at Otago, who had a reading and pizza party with his students. Michael, kia ora.
Yeah, kia ora koutou.
It's probably
Thanks
hard.
For having me tonight, Will.
It's a pleasure. It's probably extraordinarily difficult to answer this, but, you know, as an expert, do you have a verse that always comes to mind? At the top.
Well, you know, I'm going to give you two quotes that I just heard 2 minutes ago that I really loved. You give a kid a tree and they've got a friend, and not all trees are created equal. Those aren't Shakespeare, but wow, that was a great discussion you had before that. Mine is going to be a little bit, it's going to sound a little bit banal, but my favorite Shakespeare quote is five words repeated over and over. So it's never, 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 never. And that's from King Lear, when his favorite daughter has just died, and he's lying on stage alone with her. And, you know, he utters this quote just before he dies himself. And you know, the repetition of that just betrays the utter anguish. And listening to you talk about children and trees, and we can all imagine, when we can hear my daughter coughing in the background, you can all imagine the anguish that you would have if one of your children died. And even in that simplicity, there's such beauty. I mean, it's a line of entire trochees. You know, we think of Shakespeare and blank verse and everything's supposed to be iambic pentameter, but here it's flipped. Everything's the opposite meter. And, you know, it's entirely regular in that dysregularity. It's an absolutely wonderful line. It's the opposite of what you'd expect.
Oh, fantastic. And never would have thought you'd come out with that on top, but I can really understand it as you've explained it. Alison?
I'm going to bring the tone down a little, if I may. My favourite invention of Shakespeare's is happy hour.
What?
Of course, was a great line, or a line that was used to great effect in the film Shakespeare in Love, but originally comes from Henry V. I've chosen that because my study of Shakespeare at school was King Lear, which is it's quite a depressing play. I've gone for something a little more upbeat.
Amazing, amazing. Stay there, Michael. Ian.
Well, very unfortunately, I feel a bit robbed, really. The line that you read out from the Dunedin councillor was one I was going to say. Shall I compare thee to a summer day? Thou art more lovely and more temperate. It's a perfect line to charm a sweetheart. But I guess I'd also throw into the mix, what would Shakespeare say today if in New Zealand? And he might say, a health system, my kingdom for a health system without workforce shortages.
Well, we have so many here. Sally says, like flies to wanton boys, are we to the gods? They kill us for their sport. Merchant of Venice, the quality of mercy is not strained. It droppeth as the gentle rain from heaven upon the place beneath. It is twice blessed. It blesseth him that gives and him that gives and him that takes. I guess I just want to know the nuts and bolts. Why, Dr. Cobb, is it that we are still having this extraordinary relationship, well, many of us, not everyone, many of us, with Shakespeare, that when a piece of Shakespeare happens, we tend to pile on and we watch it, the pop-up globe gets crowds. What is it, 460 years on, that still makes his words sing?
Yeah, that's a really good question. I guess it speaks to you differently at different points during your life. I was interested in Allison's answer about King Lear being a depressing play. And, you know, that play in particular is depressing to me at different times of my life for different reasons. You know, I remember when I was young, I sided with his youngest daughter who didn't want to just say, look, Dad, I love you more than anything else on earth, you know. He's having that popularity contest at the beginning, and she refuses to play along. And then, you know, in the middle of my life, when he wants to go stay with his daughters a month at a time and live at their house, I hate to say it, I side with Goneril and Reagan there a little bit. But, you know, now as an older father, I definitely side with Lear and just wanting to be loved by your kids. There's something so human about a lot of his characters and a lot about what's happening.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think that's part of it. The truthiness is another thing. I mean, a lot of, when you think of Shakespearean quotes, they just have that ring of that air of truth. I'm using Stephen Colbert's term, truthiness there. There is nothing either good or bad, but thinking makes it so, or the evil that men do lives after them. The good is oft interred with their bones. You know, those type of things, when you hear them, you go, oh, yeah, that's true. And that's part of the reason why I mean, there are myriad reasons why they resonate and they stick around. But those are a couple.
Well, certainly resonating with the audience here, Wallace. I love the Banded Brothers speech from Henry the Eighth, is it? No, Henry the
Fifth.
Fifth, sorry. Amazing. The quality of mercy is not strained. It falleth like the gentle rains from heaven. Midsummer Night's Dream, another one. The course of true love never did run smooth. Dr. Cobb, kia ora. Nice to have you on the program. Appreciate it.
Thanks so much for having me tonight.
Pleasure. Let's keep those coming. Favourite Shakespeare quotes on his birthday. 460 years since the writer was born. Finally on the panel with Alison Moore and Ian Powell. This Thursday we will remember. Anzac Day is almost upon us and preparations are in full force up and down the Motu, so we can commemorate those who've served, died for our country. Let's go to Queenstown now. Chris Blackford is a member of the Queenstown RSA and Wakatipu Poppy Trust. Chris, welcome.
Welcome back. Yeah, thanks for having me.
It's a pleasure, Chris. Now, how are the preparations going there, Chris?
A bit shaky to start off with as far as the poppy collections were concerned, because it was my first year doing it. And we got everything out eventually. I mean, there were 30 different venues for collection boxes that had to be delivered, and then volunteers on the road who were out there collecting, and they had to be supplied and then resupplied, and then money taken off them, you know, so they didn't have too much cash on them. But at the end of the day, everybody seemed to be perfectly happy with what went on.
Very good. Chris, we've got a panel. Ellie.
Yeah, well done, Chris. That must be terrifying to have to be organising your first Poppy Day, because it means a great deal to a lot of people, and it has to be done exactly right, I imagine.
Yeah, and, you know, we have to look professional about it. You know, dare I say that our lady collectors all sort of dolled themselves up and looked the part. I'm sure that their appearance enhanced the donations that came their way.
Okay. Yeah. Ian?
Right.
Ian?
Well done. I was thinking, I was driving through Taranaki, through some of the small towns of Taranaki over the weekend, and you could see, I think Balls was a case in point, well, that's not Taranaki, but it was en route, but some other places as well, just by memorial, memorials, white crosses and names of people. Yeah. And it was quite an impact in terms of per capita, if you like, particularly World War One. Very extraordinary. So that was quite striking.
Just before we go, Chris, because not long to go, what is a good way for people to come together and commemorate?
Well, I think the Dawn Parade, and that's proven to be one of the best ways because it gets bigger in Queenstown. The Dawn Parade gets bigger and bigger every year, more and more attendance. And, you know, people are making it a family affair. Their parents are bringing their children down, teaching their children about what happened. And then we'll have a few speeches from some dignitaries. And it brings Kiwis together. Kiwis of all sorts, I might add. Like we talk about Australia and New Zealand Anzac Day, but when we talk about Gallipoli, we mustn't lose sight of the fact that, for instance, you know, the French lost thousands there. The Indian Army lost, I think they turned up with about 16,000 men at Gallipoli and lost 1 in 10. And, of course, the British had, I think, 250,000 killed. So it's a big deal. And we commemorate everybody, and the RSA will look after anybody and everybody that we can, where we can.
Oh, Chris, it's so nice to have you here. That's Chris Blackford from the Queenstown RSA. Waka Tu Papa Trust. I will get any shipping container questions your way, Alison Moore, because there have been a few coming through wanting to know the ticks. but for now, Ali Moore, Ian Powell, thank you so much for being with me. Great stuff.
Thank you.
Yeah, I'm Wallace Chapman with you till 8. Stay around. RNZ National.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.